Okay, thank you, Joel. Next, we'll go to John Brook, who is the Regional Director for Europe, Russia, and the Middle East.
Thank you, Joe. So let me start with Russia. So as Phil said in the introduction, Russia closed the market to U.S. beef and pork since February this year, following their announcement a year ago that they would start testing product for the presence of ractopamine. So the U.S. industry has been working hard to put together a program to develop a product which would be in conformity with what the Russians are requiring. It's taken a little bit of time for the discussions with the veterinary services in Russia to get going, but we're glad to see that some progress has been made. It's clear that we're not going to get to the end of this before the end of this year. The quotas that Russia had allocated for U.S. product are potentially going to be redistributed to other origins, although the time left for getting meat to arrive to Russia before the end of the quota year is now short, indicating as well that while Russia has got quite a good demand for meat at the moment, they're not rushing after it. So hopefully we will see that engagement now accelerate a little bit between the services, the veterinary services of the United States and their Russian counterparts, and that progress will be made to reopen that market early in 2014. The work that we've carried on in Russia and in the meantime in the states of the CIS countries, those old former Soviet Union countries around Russia, shows us that the desire to import the product is still there. So we remain confident that once we can get that market open again, that product will be able to flow again pretty quickly. To come to the European Union. So the European Union, we had in previous years very strong growth in the import of the very high quality US beef. I think that the progress made and the notoriety of the product in the European Union is excellent. We don't have to explain to people what US beef is today, what the differences are between high-quality grain-fed U.S. beef compared to local production in the European Union or other imports. That said, the growth was so strong that it was not that sort of growth was not sustainable because we were getting 100% growth per year in the first years. And now, with the situation, with the problem with the cattle prices in the United States remaining extremely high, combined a little bit with the economic situation in Europe, we're seeing a little bit of flattening out. That said, so far this year, the growth of volume of imports into the European Union is up 12%, and the growth in the value of those imports is up 17%. The growth of the use of a quota, we're seeing some competition now, just not in terms of competition of the same type of meat from other origins, but just competition in terms of using up the duty-free quota. We're seeing growth in that competition, particularly from Australia. The quota is 48,000 tons. Up until the end of the quota year, which ended on ended on the 30th of June this year, there was a total of 32,000 tons used. On the current usage of the quota so far since the 1st of July in this quota year, we could end up at somewhere nearer 39,000 to 42,000 tons at the end of June next year. And so in time, we can see that we would start to reach the top of this quota, which presents other problems for gaining access into that market, which is why the TTIP discussions become of particular interest. So the TTIP discussions, second round, is going to take place in Brussels from next Monday. The atmosphere at the minute is certainly it's going to start off with a certain amount of recrimination, but no doubt comments will be made about the surveillance by the United States of things in Europe. That said, as it is frequently pointed out, it is the European Union that set this process off, that asked for these discussions. And they did that at a time when the European Union was facing very, very difficult economic times, with the very real possibility at that time of the breakup of the Eurozone. today, the atmosphere is that, well, we've got past the worst, everything is going to work out. I find that very strange because while some countries are showing a little bit of positive growth, it's very, very marginal. And in other Eurozone countries, it's still not there at all. And the problem of unemployment in Europe is getting worse and worse. You've now got some countries with total unemployment levels above 25%, up to 27%. And you've got countries with youth unemployment of more than 50%. And that is a very, very serious social problem. So I think while things might be calm in Europe for the time being, and while the German election has maybe reassured people and Angela Merkel is meant to be holding steady at the helm, we still haven't solved or even begun to discuss what is the long-term solution to the European debt situation. Let me move on to the Middle East. So the Middle East, again, is across the Middle East. We've seen a lot of movement, a lot of social disturbance. We've got a very, very grave situation with Syria going on, which is affecting the neighboring countries and affecting countries beyond, a long way beyond. You have a lot of Syrian refugees today going as far as Egypt. So the atmosphere there is one of, I would say, a little bit of nervousness depending on where you are. We were in, myself and Dan Hallstrom, we were in Egypt, Jordan, and the Lebanon a couple of weeks ago, and it was an extremely interesting time to be there. In Egypt, the atmosphere amongst the business people was totally optimistic. They said that basically we've come down so far that things can only get better from here. We were delighted with the change in the regime, the previous regime, which was basically just considered to be incompetent in all matters of actually running a country and allowing business to operate. And now they feel very, very optimistic that they'll be allowed to get on with their jobs. Egypt, Egypt is a very big market for the United States, particularly for beef livers, but also for beef cuts. And so far this year, imports of beef cuts into Egypt have dropped 24% in volume and 42% in value, clearly showing that people need to scale down on the type of product, the quality of the product they're importing. But at the same time, the basic liver market is still fairly stable, and there are big numbers in the liver market, you know, the annual numbers around 100,000 tons. So with that atmosphere, it was very, very encouraging to think that, to hope that things just go one way from here. When we moved around to Jordan, Jordan's a small country, a country with two-thirds of the population being Palestinian refugees. Immediately there you feel the nervousness of what can happen in Syria. And then on into Beirut, a small country, but with some wealthy inhabitants and a very vibrant community in Beirut. But again, a tremendous amount of security, roadblocks, army in the street. And the problem today that effectively, when it was decided not to take any action in Syria, that effectively is more or less a tacit endorsement to say what is going on in Syria, well, that's okay, we're not going to do anything about it, so it'll carry on for a long time. And we've seen these different factions in Syria now splitting apart. And those things are replicable in the neighboring countries. So a certain amount of tension there, but let's be optimistic and let's hope that that does not get out of control. Our other market, a good market, is the United Arab Emirates. It's pretty much business as usual, although volumes are down a little bit this year, 6% down. Value of imports are up 16%, so it shows the vibrancy of that oil-rich country, still very dynamic, growing sector, with family-style dining, fast-growing retail outlets. They're still building hotels, they're still looking to increase tourism, and business is growing nicely. To finish off, Joe mentioned Africa. So the USDA held a Sub-Saharan Trade Initiative in South Africa, which I attended in early September. And a lot of people are extremely bullish on sub-Saharan Africa. They say today that the growth rates seen in China and India are now flattening out a bit or even coming down, and that the next area of great activity is in the sub-Saharan African continent. A large expectation of population increases, and within those population increases, a growing middle class. And we've seen some activities, for example, in modern retail chains, which were not non-existent before, but fairly limited, other than in countries like South Africa. You've seen Walmart today has bought a 50% stake in one of the leading South African retail stores, and that company itself is establishing their retail shops in newly built commercial shopping centres across several sub-Saharan African countries. Markets like Angola, a great deal of purchasing power from their oil revenue. And so USMEF is going to be devoting a little bit more time and energy in the months to come to take a closer look at the potential in Africa. Thank you.